Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tim Topham TV podcast, episode one. I'm really, really excited to be starting this podcast finally. It's been months in the planning, and my special guest, Daniel McFarlane, is all ready to go on camera. We'll have a chat to him in just a second. I've met lots of people in my time, sort of 3 or 4 years doing conferences and this blogging work. And I figured that, you know, it's great that I'm building up these relationships with people, but how good would it be to share these people and all their fantastic ideas with you guys? I love the idea of podcasts too, because you can listen to them, you know, in the car, when you're walking, wherever it is. So you don't have to actually be sitting there and reading a blog post. And I reckon that actually just listening to people talking and watching them, in the case of Daniel today at the piano, can be far more engaging than just reading a blog post. So that's kind of the background of why I've started it, and I hope you get lots out of it. The goal for it is a couple of posts a month, mainly interviews with teachers, bloggers, presenters, anyone with some good ideas that you can use right now, right in your studio. It's going to be applicable today. I really want to keep it relevant and current and really useful to everyone who's listening. So just a quick note about access. If you want to find this, you've got two ways of doing it. You can jump on my website, timtopham.com, which may be where you're watching this from now. And if you go to the podcast menu at the top of the screen, you'll be able to find a link to all the different episodes there. Alternatively, if you're using this in the car or you want to use it on your phone, just use the iTunes app. Search for podcasts and search for Tim Topham, T-I-M-T-O-P-H-A-M, and you'll be able to listen in and subscribe there, so you'll get updates will come straight to your phone. Now, don't feel you've got to take notes. All the notes for all of these shows will be in what we call show note files, and so the show notes for this will be at timtopham.com/episode1. That's episode with a number one next to it. But the easiest way by far is to jump on iTunes and search for it in the podcast directory. So, Daniel, you've been waiting very patiently. Good morning. How are you on this Sunday morning?
Oh, it's a wonderful day.
Good way to start a Sunday. Yep. Daniel was born in my hometown of Melbourne, actually. We're very similar aged. He's moved to Brisbane and lived there most of his life, with some time at the University of Queensland where he did some studies. He's been composing since about 2000, well, probably for longer, but he released his first compositions in 2008. They were called Supersonics, and then Sound Waves and Soundscapes came in 2011. And since then, he's kind of combined a lot of those pieces into other packages, which we can talk about in a moment. And I first met Daniel in 2011, I think it was, Daniel, at the APPC, the Australian Piano Pedagogy Conference. Fantastic event to get to. I'll leave a link in the show notes to that because it's coming up in Melbourne this year. I was doing some presentations on inspiring and motivating boys in the piano studio, and Daniel's music was a big feature of that presentation, and seemed to go well. People really responded to his music, and since then he's gone to great heights. He's amazingly famous. Everyone knows about him, and hopefully that can continue. He runs a huge studio in Brisbane, teaching at least, I think, last time I heard, Daniel, 80 kids a week or more. How many is it these days?
88 at last count, I think.
88. And all of that while composing and publishing, running Supersonics Piano. He's a father to two very cute kids, Annabelle and Freddie. So welcome. I reckon we should just get straight started into it, Daniel. Thank you for coming along.
Well, great to be here.
So this episode's all about composition. And really, I've been talking to a lot of teachers in the last few years, and a lot of them have come to me and said, you know, how do you get started with composing? How do you take a student's idea? You know, they come into a piano lesson, they play three notes, they're really excited, they've made their first piece of music. What do you then do with it? Or what do you do when you've got no idea, but you know that composing is great for students? So, Daniel, I might just talk about your music. How did you get into the composing?
Well, I did a little bit of composing through uni, but that was always in the framework of assignments. So compose is the style of this. So I think my mum has a collection of some of the little things I did as a kid, but I mean, there was nothing terribly serious. My first piece came around when I was just fiddling, and I came up with this piece, and then I downloaded one of the dodgiest old notes software programs to write it out, and I wrote it out and I gave it to a kid, and they learned and they said, oh, that's great, do another one. So I said, okay, we'll go try another one, and then another one, another one. And then a lot of the educational pieces, my lower ones, came in because I was sort of missing that in my sort of progression for kids. So I thought, oh, well, I need something for this little technical point. So I composed a piece for it, and then I need something for this. So it sort of snowballed from there. And then some kids, some of the boys in particular, said, oh, well, I want a new piece. And then I don't like that, and I don't like that. You better just write me a new one. So yeah, we write another one. And then so it keeps on snowballing. And then these days, it's just a bit of a force of habit. Every day I just try and do some composing, and then keep it rolling along all the time.
Well, I don't know how you find the time with all that you're doing, but I'm glad you do, because that's great. And look, I think it's really special, because most of us, me included, as a teacher, I don't compose for my students, but I can see that it would be a fantastic thing to do. So it sounds like, yeah, you know, you were teaching a particular method or following some books, and it's like, actually, I really want them to learn more about this structure or this idea. I'm just going to write a piece. I think it's, you know, it's great. So for students that are new to your music and have never been to your site, where would you recommend they start? How do they hear the music? You know, where do they begin?
Well, that's why pretty much all my stuff, I love digital, because obviously I'm fairly time poor. So for me, everything, as soon as I compose it and it gets tested on my students, and everyone, and they go, yeah, like it, no, don't like it, so thrown out. So I put up on the website, recording up, put all the sample pages up. So basically it's like you're going to a music store and browsing. You can go see the whole piece as a sample, listen to the whole in piece in its entirety, and then decide, yep, this piece is for me, this I'll know.
Yep.
So it's so easy and efficient for me, because everything's automated, which is wonderful.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it makes sense. And it's so easy for us. We just go to your website, we can download, we've got it instantly. We don't have to leave our studio. It's fantastic. Now, on the downloads, I've got to ask you, I'm really excited because you've introduced a studio licensing system. Now, for people that don't know what that means, can you tell teachers how is that relevant and important for them?
Well, a lot of the other composers as well doing this now, it means that instead of having to buy multiple copies for students when they come to the piece, you buy one copy once and then use that across your whole studio forever. So obviously it's slightly more expensive than single print, but in the long run it ends up being more economical and a lot easier to keep track of. So yeah. I recommend, a lot of teachers also have just have a basic studio charge or just charge per download. So for students it's great, because they just get all the pieces that they want. They don't necessarily have to get a whole book of pieces that they don't like just to get that one piece. And yep, students and teachers, it's great. Buy it once, put it in your, save it on your computer, and whenever you need it, bring it out.
I mean, it sounds like an absolute win for teachers, but it doesn't sound like a win-win for you. Isn't this going to cut into your revenues?
No, not. I mean, I would like to make things. I like people to have. I mean, basically, I buy studio licenses because I like it, because it's simple for me. And I don't need to worry about, okay, what sort of license do I buy for this one, or can I use this one? And that's how I would like to buy my music, so that's how I like to sell it. And I'm figuring, well, I'm coming up with a lot of new pieces at the moment, so, I mean, there's going to be new stuff all the time. So if you like my pieces, keep on buying my new stuff. And that's... Yeah. Basically, what I like people to do, I like people to have a giant Supersonics folder on their computer that gets used.
Yeah.
Because that was the main motivation for starting this for me. I mean, it's to get my music played, and that's what I really enjoy. Mm. I love getting feedback, and so this is getting my music out there as simply as possible.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, look, we are all very, very grateful, because I think it's the way publishing is going to have to go, probably, because it's just realistic. But it is a great opportunity for us, because we can just use this music widely in our studio. And I'm a huge fan of your music, as you know, anyway. And I've recently come across, you've got just a new release out last week or the week before, called Castle Escapes, which I've already started using on my kids, and they're loving it already. Why did you come up with that collection? Why the different keys? That's an interesting one.
Well, this one, since it was digital only, I decided that, so no hard copies of it. I thought, the original key was C minor, and I was looking to sort of have a parallel progression to my original Supersonics book. So to start off with a fairly limited range, and then all the little technical things I like to put in, like moving over the top of the thumb and little stretches and things like that. And people have always been asking me to write more pieces in the style of one particular piece, which mm-hmm. is Fortress, which is a big dramatic movie theme sound. So yeah. I sat down over the Christmas holidays. I thought, okay, well, I want more pieces that sound like this. So a dramatic movie theme, simple range of notes, but also exploring different ends of the piano. So using a lot of octave, two octaves higher, two octaves lower, so students can be all over the place with a simple range of notes and be sounding the sound that they really like, the movie theme sound.
Absolutely.
And then I thought, well, since it's digital publishing and not necessarily everyone follows the same progression that I do, so we have it in four different keys, it means that it's a lot more accessible for students, and teachers can slot the pieces in at different times in a student's progression. So if you're coming out of a C major sort of closed hand position, if you're adding some flats, and then you can use the C minor or use the D minor one if you want to start covering some key signatures, G minor if you're coming off if you're in that spot in the piano at the moment, and then A minor if that's the first minor key you go to. So I thought, well, it's digital publishing. We can do it. I can do it incredibly easily.
Yeah.
Just do it in the retypes it and it's done. So why not?
Yeah. So look, it's great and gives us so much flexibility. So it'll be an interesting one to see how it works and how students teachers respond to it. Fantastic. Well, look, let's get on to some of these ideas about composing for teachers, because that's what we're here to really talk about. So that whole idea of, student comes to your lesson with a little idea and you want to build on it, or you're like me and you're a teacher that knows that composing is great for students' understanding of music and chords and progressions, all that kind of stuff. Where do we start? What do we do?
Well, I thought today we'd sort of go over five little areas, and the first three is sort of more, well, how to give you a framework for coming up with that initial spark and idea, or to give you a framework to look at, say, I need a piece that's in this particular style or genre or has this sound, so some ideas for that, and then two ideas for developing those ideas. And These are all the style of, I don't know, my pieces, so stuff that I like. So if you're looking for movie themes, sort of more contemporary pop, easy listening, then these are some ideas for you. So it's all in this contemporary accessible sound. So the first one, we're looking at some pentatonic scales, some modes, a syncopation, and then some very cool little bass lines and various minimalist techniques. So obviously all these topics are huge, and we could be here all day just talking about one of them. So I thought I'd just brush on each one. And with the cheat sheet at the end, so you can take it away and say, okay, well, this particular sound we should use, combine this mode with this particular set of harmonies, and away you go.
Yeah, sounds great. And look, Daniel, thank you very much. You have provided a cheat sheet, which I'll put on the show notes, which gives a rundown of these five areas that Daniel's going to talk about now. So I reckon let's get stuck into this first one, which is about pentatonic and related scales, which are ways, I think, for you of just starting to get an idea for composing. Is that right?
Yeah. So the pentatonic, so most people are familiar with the pentatonic. So if we're going the five note scale, so if we're going from C, it'll just be C, D, E, G, A. So obviously a lot of folk music is based around this. And the good thing about all the pentatonic scales is that no matter which note you play, it always sounds correct. It always sounds right. So do whatever you want. So, you know, when you're improvising and you need one of your go-to scales to improvise would be a pentatonic scale. And so if you have a student, you say, okay, well, to make up your first little melody, you might want to say, okay, well, we'll just stick with these notes because you know they're all going to sound correct. And you can virtually combine that with any sort of harmonic progression, simple harmonic progression, to get a simple melody. So a simple pop song can basically be most people know the four chord progression of 1, 6, 4, 5. It's quite simple. Imagine you cover all this in all your improvising and 12.
Yeah, yeah. So that's for teachers, just in case they don't know, we're in the key of C major. That would be the C chord, the A minor chord, the F chord, and the G chord, yeah?
Okay. So if you want, a student's coming in their first pop song, they want a song to create something, we can just use the pentatonic melody, add that little four chords. Thank you.
sounds great already.
Yeah, obviously that's just improvising, but obviously improvising is just composing sort of on the spot. So using that as a little framework to expand, so it's quite simple. Pick another chord progression, have another go at the top. So if
and
you're
would you suggest that the teacher could play that progression while the student does the improvising, or would you get the student to try doing both at the same time?
Because I like to keep a sort of nice, a sort of smooth flow between improvising and composing. So we get the idea, okay, well, some ideas will flow from improvising. So I would play the chord and the chord progression and student have a go over the top. Or coming the other way, okay, let's try and have a slightly more systematic approach. So we want to do this particular thing in this piece. So let's come up with ideas what the chord progression should be and what our melody should be, and then combine the two. But I mean, it's obviously it's a two-way street. And when I'm composing, I sit here with my iPhone, and when a little idea comes to my head, I record it in voice memos.
So
I encourage all my students, if they're that way inclined, make sure you have, as soon as a little idea comes, record it down and get it down, so then we can build on it later. So that would be the first one.
Yep.
And that's major pentatonic. But that's unfortunate, and a lot of people get stuck with that. And that's it's a pretty simple, boring little thing. So now I talk about something to make pentatonic a bit more exciting. You can turn it into the minor pentatonic. So if you rearrange the notes, so if we're from the C one, if you start from A instead of C, we now have a minor version, the same five notes. If we put a different chord progression under that, so an A minor chord, an F major chord, and a G major chord, we can have another little pop song.
Yeah, I can see that kind of thing really appealing with particularly the teenagers and the adults for that matter.
And I mean, it's also, if you find, okay, little chord progression, if you're looking through pop music or movie themes, if you see a little chord progression, if you're a teacher, write it down.
Yeah.
I mean, same thing with your students, encourage them to write it down, because it's undoubtedly not going to be original. It's going to occur all over the place. There's only so many combinations of 2, 3, 4 chords that you can do.
Yeah.
But if you start getting a repertoire of these little things, it ends up being little building blocks. When I started composing, I heard something in a little piece, and I thought, oh, what is that? So it worked out what happened there. You go, okay, well, I might do something along those lines. You hear something else. So it ends up being, you end up building this big, giant repertoire of sounds and techniques that you can use. Mm. It all starts with little things, just little snippets. So that major and minor pentatonic are very simple,
yeah.
But get some little great results from it.
Absolutely.
And then, so building on from that, if you want to go back and say, okay, well, I want more of a blues jazzy sound, if you take the that minor pentatonic scale and add the blues note, so if we're doing it from A, B, A, C, D, D sharp or E flat, and then E and G, so that's most blues music will be in that. If you're in the jazz band or whatever and you need to have a solo quick smart,
yep,
then you use the blues scale. So it's useful, very useful to think of it, though, as built off pentatonic, because you get the sense of your head of, okay, all these notes are going to sound well, and there's a sort of continuum. If you want a more contemporary sound, I can use this just straight minor,
yep,
pentatonic. If I want to jazzify it up, add a jazz scale. So
that's really, that's really good. Really good. I actually hadn't made that connection before. I teach the blues scale. I tend to teach it in C just as a blues scale, and I've shown videos about that before. So to think of it actually as a pentatonic with a blues note, mate, that's fantastic.
If you take out the blues note, then and you're still doing, want more a nice, you can make a good world music sort of dance anthem sort of sound just from the pentatonic notes.
Yeah.
And so when the sound I just created in that little thing I was improvising before, compare that to the sound. This is one of my little pieces called Funk, and this totally uses the blues scale all the way through. So you can hear the difference there that you get just from adding that one blues note.
Yeah.
So basically, we've got all the notes pretty much the same. Add that little blues note, and suddenly we're in a whole new realm of sound.
Yeah, it's gone from kind of the pop chilled out kind of pop style of piano to blues with one note. Yeah. It's fantastic.
So, and then another extension on that, if we take the major pentatonic scale, the C, D, E, G, A, and we flatten or lower the E and the A, so we get C, D, E flat, G, A.
Oh, yeah. So
the Hiroyoshi tuning, it's a Japanese tuning, also used extensively throughout Asian music. Beautiful thing about it is that, again, it's a pentatonic melody and virtually all the notes sound correct.
Yeah.
So combine this with just a normal tonic and subdominant harmonies and you can get...
Yeah, nice.
An exotic sound. And then there's Australian composer Ross Edwards. There's a piece called French Panny. So at the top end of... the composing spectrum, you can get pieces that sound like this.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, I have to have a link for that whole one. That's such a beautiful piece. But if you look at it, it looks very intimidating on the page. But when you get down to it, it's just using this very simple tuning. And there's only three chords, three harmonies he uses throughout the whole piece. And he gets this amazing sound from it. If you take a few little steps back from there, there's a little piece I have called Mist, which uses the same sort of thing. See, again, we've just got five simple notes, and suddenly we've just shot halfway around the globe.
Yeah.
And could be sitting somewhere over in Japan and listening to that. And it's basically the same. We've changed two notes from our basic pentatonic.
Yeah, it's so great. And now I know the name of a new scale. Hiroyoshi. Yeah, it's great.
It's a wonderful scale, especially a lot of my high school students, because there's a lot of composition involved in high school music in Australia. As Australian people would know, that's a great one to use, particularly if you need to create the atmospheric sound for like a movie theme.
Mm.
One of their assignments that I have to do up here is create a score for a scene from a movie. So using something like that, suddenly you've got this wonderful exotic sound that's very easy to work with.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why I like the pentatonic ones, because you have these four options here and they're all very easy to work with, and the range of sounds you can get from them is incredibly diverse.
Absolutely, yeah. And so just to confirm, the left-hand chords you were using with that Hiroyoshi scale was a C minor and an F minor, was it?
It's C minor, F minor.
Yeah, it's great.
Because they're the sort of harmonies that implied. I thought we wouldn't go talk too much about harmonic progressions today because, I mean, it's a huge topic. We're just brushing over the ones that are sort of implied from the actual, from the scales.
Mm,
so in that one, chords 1 and 4 are sort of implied by the notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why it's the simplest harmonies you can work with.
Yeah. And so then what about scales? Do you use scales or not?
Well, scales, these ones, most of my students will learn how to play a pentatonic scale just because it's very useful. And also major pentatonic, minor pentatonic and the blues scale. You can't go too far wrong if you just add a few of those ones in.
Mm. But what about your normal major and minor scales and that sort of thing? Do you use them for composing?
Yeah, I'll move. Oh, yes, my next topic.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, we're moving on. They're in the modes. So we're talking about the modes and we're talking about the church mode. So if you take a C major scale and play from C to C, that's normal major or the Ionian mode. And then if you play from D to D, then that's Dorian, and then Phrygian, Lydian, Mixolydian, Aeolian, and Locrian. So we'll cover those briefly, just because each of them, the same thing when we talk about the pentatonic. If you need a particular sound, then you can have a go-to mode for that.
Yeah, that's right.
That's,
Yeah, and look, we're so fixated on major and minor, and maybe a melodic minor if we're lucky, because of the exam system, particularly in Australia and probably the UK too. Do you actually teach your students, do you get them to play Lydian modes as a scale, a technical warm-up?
Not modes. These days, for my teaching, my default minor is natural minor or Aeolian mode, so I'll teach that first.
Before the harmonic.
Just because harmonic is such a... Well, it's an awful sound in a scale, and as the name suggests, you need it for harmonies, but the sort of harmonies you need it for are Western classical music traditional harmonies. So if you want to be composing pieces in the Western classical tradition, that's great. You need to know that scale. Mm. You need to know that set of notes. But if you want to do something that's more contemporary and avoids that sound, then you're going to the natural minor Aeolian mode is a lot more useful for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, it makes more sense for me to be able to teach C major, A minor, if you're playing the same scale, or then they have the same note set.
Yeah, I use it for the same purpose, yeah, to be able to say, okay, A minor is exactly the same as C major, it's the same notes, that's why they're related, and you don't change any notes for the natural minor. That's right.
No.
And then you can talk about the harmonic later with the raised seventh.
Well, it's useful to just put it in sort of historical context for students to say, well, look, the music you hear today, a lot of it, the stuff that you like, if they're listening to Jan Tiersen or Yoruba or Ludwig Einaudi, I mean, they rarely go into harmonic minor. It's all about the natural minor and that flowing sound that you get from it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's useful to say to them, well, this harmonic minor is a type of minor, and it's a type of minor that's particular to a certain sound. So, because I think it turns students off minor when they even have to hear that awful sound. They go, well, this is not really, how can I use this?
Just in case teachers are wondering what we're talking about, can you give us a demo of the difference between the harmonic and the natural minor?
Well, natural minor, if we just go A to A, and then harmonic minor is raising the seventh. Harmonic minor you need it because in Western harmony we're always raising that seventh to get the pull back to the tonic, and you don't necessarily want that all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then obviously melodic minor is a combination. Again, the set of notes which is somewhat particular to Western classical music. So if you put all the context through all, you need to know all of them, obviously.
But for the purposes of getting kids making good sounds and enjoying it,
you need to say, well, the sound that you're going to be most familiar with now is that natural minor sound, and you can do things with this set of notes which will sound great, and you can avoid all the huge number of rules and things that you need to worry about. As soon as the lead note comes in, it's
more trouble. Complex. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Oh, I agree. So tell me more about these other scales and how you might use them with us.
I thought we'd brush on the modes. Obviously, modes talk a huge topic. So the first one, the simple major scale, we're no point talking about it, because if you're doing any sort of set standard theory textbook, whatever, you're going to know about the major mode.
I think we're all familiar with that, yeah.
So the Dorian mode, I thought I'd have a look at some of these modes. If you go on Wiki or just go on any search engine and type in these modes, you're going to get lots of examples and across all the various time periods as well. I thought I might have a look at ones that are pretty contemporary so sounds you'll hear now, and also slightly more unusual sounds that you can get from the modes. So don't take these as all the complete range of sounds you can get, but just some interesting ones.
Sounds good.
So the Dorian mode, which is sort of D to D. So I thought the two things would sort of highlight about this one is that you can get a great nautical sound. So if you want a piece that sounds like... has that sort of...
What do we do with the drunken sailor?
Yeah. Well, Peter Sculthorpe is an Australian composer. His piece, Sea Chant, the opening of that. You can hear that lift there.
Oh, absolutely.
You get in mode, and you practically taste the salt. And that's so if you want a piece about the sea, then you can choose Dorian mode. It's all because... Dorian mode is basically a minor, natural minor scale with that raised sixth note. So instead of playing a B flat, if you're going from D, you play a B natural.
Yeah.
And so the implied harmony of that is that you're going to have a major subdominant chord, so a G major chord. So you can then, if you want to have that in more in pop music sounds, you can do the same thing, and you get this nice sense of lift all the way through whenever it comes in.
Yeah, it's really open and
there's some nice sense lift from having the minor, then going to major, and then dropping back down. So it's interesting if you want to have try and develop a sort of interesting pop sound that doesn't rely on the 1-6-4-1 all the time.
Yeah.
So a lot of kids, a lot of my teenagers, sort of, because you can get it's quite easy to get stuck. You get stuck in a rut when you're doing more contemporary stuff because you have the certain chord progressions. You know they're going to sound good. And you know you can do stuff over the top of them, but start using things like this and say, okay, well, I can use this mode and I can still get a poppy sound out of it, but I can get something which sounds more interesting as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was, you were just improvising on the notes of D Dorian, which is the white notes from D to D, and in your left hand you were going between a D minor and a G major chord.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Could try that tomorrow in my lesson. Sounds great.
Yeah. So the Phrygian mode, which is E to E, if you're coming from a C major bass. So there's a lot of context within this. You can use Phrygian mode associated with specific chords, particularly if you're coming from a jazz background. We're not going to talk about that because it gets way too in-depth. So this is to create like an overall sound of your piece. If you use the notes from this particular set, a sort of underutilized function is to make a really sort of savage, aggressive sound. So if you're looking for chase music or something in a movie score, whatever, where you're getting into angry music. So this is just.
Yeah, right.
A line called Predator, which has the same sort of sound.
Very cool. It's really interesting because I've often considered the Phrygian mode to be more Spanish or exotic kind of sounding. Well, but it doesn't have to be, does it?
No, that's what I thought. I'd highlight this one particular sound you can get out of it because everyone seems to have Phrygian. They go, well, I'm still using with chord one against major and it ends up sounding, I don't know, to me it sounds a bit blah.
Yeah.
So this is how I use it. I like to use it, that particular aggressive driving sound. And so it's very good for that.
Yeah,
so that's
great.
I was just improvising there. I was just using open fifths on E and B and then moving up to F and C. And just using notes from Phrygian. And then suddenly we got this super aggressive, angry sound, which you don't really expect from that mode.
I want to go and try it right now. It sounds really good.
And then so we're moving up, so that's the first three. The next one, Lydian mode. This one is probably the Simpsons mode. Everyone will be familiar with this. So good old Danny Elfman loves this mode. It's just basically major with a sharpened fourths. So if you're going from C to C, it'd be major scale with an F sharp instead of an F.
Yep, a raised fourth.
Yeah, raised four. So it's easy if you want to have a quirky sound. If you get into, okay, I want a piece that's going to put a smile or a little chuckle, so you can... I'm not sure we get much of a smile out of that one, but that was just...
I get the idea.
C and G against it, and then just dropping down to A and E, so just using tonic and then some median harmony. Yep. Which is a fairly simple standard thing to do, but using that scale, suddenly got add a little bit of quirkiness built into it.
Yeah, for
sure. Without having to work too hard for it.
Yep.
And then we keep on going up. The Mixolydian, so that's basically G to G, all on the white notes. So it's instead of having the raised seventh, the F sharp, just drop it down to the normal F.
Okay.
So this has been used quite extensively in pop music. So Hey Jude, Beatles, a big bit at the end. And also, so the two things I'd like to highlight about this mode is if you want a medieval sound, this is a great mode.
Okay.
So put something in triple time with a nice dun, 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 dun. So a Brisbane composer, Genevieve Memory, has a little piece called Banquet.
Very cool.
Nice. It's a happy open sound.
Yeah, it's like medieval banquet, drinking wine and eating meat. That's great.
And also, if you're coming into, where is this one? So I'll write one down for this. If you get the rock and the rock pop sound, so this is so that Hey Jude sound, but also
yeah, it's great.
It was just dropping down using the notes from the scale. So I was using the set from G to G in the right hand, left hand. There was a G major chord going down to F major, E minor, coming back up to F major.
How easy is that?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just as easy as working with the standard, more standard progression, but the sound you get is just a little more interesting.
Absolutely.
So all the things I'm talking about today, they're very easy to implement, but you can try to expand out on the range of sounds that are possible. So they're the two things for Mixolydian. Now, we get to Ale, and we talked about that a lot just before, and I was suggesting, that it should be your default minor these days, mm-hmm. and it's pretty much true. So I mean, it's very easy to work within. So the second piece that I ever composed was a piece called Pretty Piece, which I was very good with the titles back then. I thought, well, it's a pretty piece. What should I call it? Pretty Piece. So. Simple.
Yeah, yeah. I love getting my students working in A minor because it's white notes, it's easy to put chords with. Yeah, it's a winner.
And it's simple and effective. So that's why I would say, okay, well, if you're in C major, well, then go to A minor. It's the same set of notes. Obviously, you're using slightly different chords, but they're not that hard to teach. I mean, you know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's my sort of go-to rundown of the modes, just to say, okay, well, I want this particular sound. Okay, I can use this mode.
Yeah,
and you shouldn't be scared of modes. I mean, they're quite simple to work with because they're a lot like the pentatonic. A lot of the time, that any note you play is a pretty good chance of sounding good. Mm. Basically,
that's great. And just a reminder to listeners, we've got a cheat sheet on this, so you don't have to be writing all this down. If you've already forgotten the first mode we talked about, it's all there on a sheet, and you're going to be able to give some examples in that follow up blog post too.
So do a follow up blog post and have beat rich listening examples, so full pieces and examples of scores, so you can direct students there, and you can go and have a look at it and listen yourself.
That's awesome. That's great. Cool. So what's the next thing?
A bit of syncopation. Well, obviously, syncopation, you go, well, that's duh, easy. But just a few things. It's quite simple to suddenly add a bit more interest or add a bit more drive or momentum or a sense of going somewhere to a piece just by knowing a few of the simple syncopated patterns.
Yep.
So if you go back, the first piece that we played all the way back in the minor pentatonic was my little piece, H and X. So if you listen, we had the minor pentatonic scale. So I thought we'd come back to this piece because it has a few different things that stack up. So
yeah,
minor
pentatonic,
now add syncopation in. So you can hear there, we've got that syncopated pattern happening, which gives a sense of drive. And actually, syncopation all the time for accents the strong beat, so actually a stronger sense of beat coming through.
Yeah.
And then if you want to have most people know the opening of Clocks by Coldplay. So this is one of the syncopated patterns that you really should get familiar with, the 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2, because you can build whole pieces on that. So I have a little piece called Urban Beat, which is based on that. That's 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2.
Yeah.
Simple melodies, simple harmonies. This little feel of the dun 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 dun, and really gives a piece a nice.
It drives it forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, Another one, it's good to know, is the 1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2-1-2-1-2, which is an extension of the other one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, you can build a whole piece on that, or you can use it at certain points. So this is a piece of mine called The Chase.
Yeah.
You can go back and say, well, I like to, there's some of these syncopated patterns. You can go back then and take one of your modes or take one of your pentatonic scales and add something to that. And so you get the one, two, dun, 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 dun. So like in the Coldplay piece, and suddenly got something which sounds even better again.
Yeah. So let's say, you know, my kid's going really well with some improvising. They can play some basic chords. They can do a pentatonic scale. What if we said, all right, let's do some syncopation. What would I get them to kind of tap and get the feel for it, and then try and do that with their right hand? Or
well, I'd probably try and tap the dun, 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 get this feeling that, and then maybe start to make it so.
Yep.
Makes it a repetitive melodic pattern.
Yeah.
And then trying to feel that getting that ingrained. You can also do it just in the left hand if you just have the put the chords in that rhythm. So with the where's a good one? So I was taking this idea we had all the way back with the minor pentatonic, but then making the left hand into that 1-2-3-1-2-3-1-2, or long, long, short.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of teaching in terms of chords.
Yeah.
So it just gives extra little bit of flavour, an extra another extra option.
Extra spice. I like it. And I imagine it's the sort of thing that a teacher could play some chords, boom, 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 and say, all right, you've got your pentatonic scale, why don't you try something that's going to fit along with that or something.
And
yeah.
I like it because it's very, it's obviously very contemporary sound. It's what you're going to hear on the radio and movies and things like that. So students here, they're going to go, oh, yep, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, yeah. I was working on a piece of written syncopation with a student the other day, and when he got it, and he kind of sank into it and just could feel the groove, he absolutely loved it because.
Yes.
And I think he turned to me and said something like, "Oh, this is how music should sound, isn't it?" Sort of thing. Like, it's not all boring 4/4. This is great. So I love the idea of syncopation, and it is really natural for us. When we take it away from getting kids to read it on the page, which can be confusing, to just feeling, this is how it feels, and they go, oh, that's easy. I know that feeling because I hear it all the time.
Yeah, when you've got it, the beat ends up being stronger because you can really, dun, 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 dun. You can really feel where those beats are.
Absolutely.
Emphasize by the fact that you're having putting these notes not on them.
No, that's great. All right, so we've talked about kind of the melodies we can use, the sets of notes, the pentatonic scales, the modes. We've talked about syncopation, so the rhythmic ideas. What else have you got?
So we're coming from coming from the melodic end, and then obviously talk about some of the harmonies that can be implied along with that, and then once you've got that initial idea, in terms of developing it, and this is a hard, huge topic. And I know back when I was taught it at uni, we were taught, okay, well, this is how to develop in a classical sense, or this is how to write a fugue, this is how to do this. But I thought I'd have a look at, okay, this is how you can possibly do it in a more contemporary sense.
Okay.
So this is how you can do it if you want to have that movie theme sound or that minimalist sound or the the nice flowing sound that you get that all the teenagers seem to love. So we're talking about bass lines. So if you get up a repertoire of cool sounding bass lines, if you stack that with a bit of repetition in your right hand, nice one of these scales,
yep,
maybe a bit of syncopation, suddenly got something sounds good. So if we come back to that piece before, Agent X. So we've got the pentatonic melody, we've got some syncopation, now listen to the bass line. So see, I've got three times through that my simple melody in the right hand, my left hand is just dropping down. So I just went A, G, D, back to E. So it's all these things. These are, I like to call them like my boy books.
Yeah.
You find to have these things that drop in. And it's also a good point to talk about, okay, music as a continuum across the ages, because a lot of my teen boys, oh, teenagers, I shouldn't say teen boys. So a lot of my teenagers like to play the first movement of the Moonlight Sonata.
Absolutely.
And a while ago when I was doing a presentation on this, I thought, well, you know, this is, to me, one of the coolest pieces of classical music. It was the first piece I learnt, sort of of my own volition when I was a teenager. I sat down and worked out myself. And then looking at it, and I saw, well, you know, Beethoven's pretty much stacked in everything in one movement that I find cool in composing. I mean, there's right at the start, we have... drop it down, see, to my ears, that goes, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've only got four or five bars in. We've already got dropping, descending bass lines. We've already got suspensions. Mm. You get a little bit further in the piece and you've got pedal notes. You know, all these very cool things. And you can go, well, yep, that's why I liked it.
Yeah, and that's why everyone likes it, you know?
Yeah. So this is one of my pieces, a lot of the time, in terms of developing ideas, expanding them into a whole piece, go to these bass lines. So in Agent X we had that. Another one of my pieces, Night Flyer, which is one of the most popular sort of boy ones. Simple melody over the top.
Yeah, I can see why that's
appealing. Whole recording, someone goes for a while.
Yeah.
And that's just a simple moving down. And so when I was composing, I didn't sit down to and think in terms of chords. I didn't say, okay, this is going my harmonic progression. I sat down and thought in terms of sound. So combining that sort of stock bass line against my melody, the harmonies end up being implied from that, but I didn't sit down and plan it out in terms of a specific harmonic structure. So that's why it's good to have these various bass lines. And I've got a few on the cheat sheet there that you can just, if you know them, then you can say, okay, well, I can stack that against this little melody I have and suddenly have a section of a piece which works really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I'm talking about. Because it's a way into expanding on little ideas without going to a hugely complex discussion on harmonic progressions.
Mm, yeah, that's it. And I like it. I mean, I'll teach my students about progressions, but you know, one of the simplest things to do like that is to get them to repeat an A minor chord, for example, in the right hand. Lots of pedal. Start with A's in the left hand, A octaves, and then just move down. Just go down to G. Keep going. You can go down to F, E. You can just go all the whole octave all the way to the bottom. And it all sounds good, and
you can do.
Yeah, that's right. So bass lines, yeah, really, really crucial. Was there anything else you wanted to mention on the bass lines?
It's just another thing to keep in mind, just little ideas that you can just sort of take off the shelf and use. So they're not complex things, they're simple things. And then when you hear it in a piece, you go, well, that's interesting. So, I don't know, you work out what it is and then put it in the little memory bank, and then when you want to use it, take it out.
Yeah.
This is what I do all the time. And, I mean, I love a descending bass line. I don't think I've ever come across a descending bass line that I don't like. I use them all the time because, to me, they're just like one of the coolest things you can do.
Yeah. It's very film-like. Film composers use that all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it creates a very specific sound, and it really does hook into... I know, it's a certain part in my brain anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's fantastic. And I think you've got one more kind of area to talk to you talk
about. Minimalist techniques. So we talk about, I mean, the term minimalism associated with Philip Glass and various other composers, but it's sort of expanded. It's the sort of, a lot of these techniques are used in film music now because they lend themselves to layering and stacking. So they're not... the sense of developing ideas through layering sounds and small harmonic changes and rhythmic repetition, because it's very good because it gives you a sense of going somewhere, but it's also a very flexible way to develop your music. So if you listen to the first one of Philip Glass piece, one of his Metamorphoses,
thank you.
very simple harmonic progression beginning. And then those simple layering of sound. So you get, if you look at that piece, it's quite a simple piece, but it's very effective. So just from keeping these very simple sounds, very simple harmonies, layering things one on top of one another. Yeah. So I have a little piece named called Reflections, which is based on this little pattern. And this is what you can do with just this little pattern. Basically, it's based on one little idea. Mm. There's another piece which I'll put in the extended blog called Monsoon, which is based on a simple watery theme. So it's the sense that, I know, for me, it took me a long while to hook out of this idea of, that I must develop my ideas in a certain way, because that's how it was sort of drummed into me at university.
Yeah.
Sort of, discover these new ways by myself, really, because they don't really teach this sort of contemporary. Well, they didn't when I was back in which admittedly is a while ago.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if it hasn't changed that much, but we can hope. We can hope it has. Look, that's fantastic, and that minimalist idea, you know, is used all the time in film and contemporary piano scores. So it's no wonder that students really get engaged by it, and they love it as well because. Yes. They learn one pattern and they've learned half the piece sort of thing as well. So I find kids really love that kind of thing. It's like, okay, so let's learn the first bar. Now, let's have a look at all the rest of those bars. Is there any similarities? Yes, there is. That's great sort of thing. And then add a descending bass line, which I think you do in Monsoon, which is one that I have used with my students. Yes. And you've got a great piece. Yeah.
Well, it's also useful if you're working with other instruments, you're not quite so familiar with other instruments, if you're helping a student with work for school, if they have to compose something which has violins or whatever. So because you can use these ideas of layering sounds.
Yeah.
So, well, the piano can do this or the violin can do this, and then the idea of expanding and creating interest across the whole work by having layers of sound.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. No, it's great. Really, really, really good ideas. And so all of those points are going to be in your cheat sheet, aren't they?
Yeah, so all these basic points today we just covered in sort of point form, so you can say, okay, what was that? Oh, yeah, that was that one. And then we'll expand on this with full listening examples in a bigger post.
In the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned for that. Now, we had a couple of quick audience questions. I think one of them we've completely answered anyway. Angela asked, I've been doing tons of improvising, aka jam sessions with my students, so I'm sure this could lead to composing, but, you know, what steps do you take to turn that kind of improvising into composing? And I think that's what we've talked about, isn't it?
Yeah. So just sort of viewing it as well, it's a continuum. So some composing is going to grow out from improvising that you do, and the same thing, you can take the same sort of ideas, the same sort of scales and harmonic ideas, and say, well, we're coming in, we're going to do no preconceptions, see what we come up with. Yes. Or you can take it from a slightly more from the other and say, well, we want to do something like this, so let's try and create something using with a particular sort of sound. So I don't like to see there's a big gulf between the two.
Yeah.
I mean, improvising is just composing on the spot, basically.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I agree. And so there's one other question. Diane asked, I'd love to be able to turn pieces of music into duets to help students learn a piece of music in a fun way. And is there any tips about how to go about that? I found this interesting because I often choose piano methods based on, you know, good accompaniments and backing tracks and stuff like that, because it does make it much more fun when they're playing a really simple melody they're first learning to read. So it's an easy way to kind of vamp some chords or something for them?
I don't really do vamping chords. I mean, if you want to, obviously you can use the harmonics that they're provided by the little piece, but a lot of the time they're going to be pretty babyish.
Yeah.
So some of the ideas we're talking about now would work really well. So I've just actually finished doing a duet version of Brother John of Ferrojaka. So that's a very simple one. You can do a vamp with that. It's not necessarily going to be terribly exciting.
Yeah.
You can go, the route I took was to say, okay, well, let's put a nice descending bass line with it. It sounds better when it's on duet because it has a, that's my quick reduction of it. But that was just taking the descending bass line. So a lot of these little little nursery rhymes, this is actually something I'm doing over the next few months. I'm looking to take all these nursery rhymes that I teach because I like to teach them because they're familiar, happy, nice, accessible sounds for little students.
Mm-hmm.
And take them and put a bit of a twist on all of them. So do things like that, putting in a slightly different harmonic context and expanding them so take their ear from, okay, well, this is from the little nursery, this is from something we know, and then take it and say, oh, put it in a different setting.
Yeah.
So some of the ideas we're just talking about, so the descending bass line, even putting some syncopation in your accompaniment, will take all these little ideas and sort of put a bit of a more modern twist on them.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And I might actually mention Jennifer Eklund's Piano Pronto method. She's an American teacher who's got a great series, which I'll link to in the show notes. And she's got these accompaniments for her introductory pieces, and they're really, really cool. And they feature things like some unusual harmonic shifts that aren't expected for Mary Had a Little Lamb, and some great bass lines and things like that, and arpeggiation. So I might put a link to that as well for Diane.
I know that when I was learning up, there was a particular system, and it was sort of, I know, the idea that I came out of it with was that if you expose your students' ears to something slightly exotic, they'll sort of explode. They need to follow a set pattern, so one chords, 1, 4, and 5, 7, and then take those chords somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then it's very structured, and you can't do that sound because that'll totally ruin the students' ears. And I'm sort of going against that and say, well, no, listen to everything that a student will listen to in their everyday life now, and it's incredibly diverse, and there's no reason why you can't be introducing these things. So if you're a little student and you're going to play C, D, E, F, G, if you add in E flats, F sharps, going over the top to a B flat, stretching up to an A flat, you suddenly have all these wonderful options that were basically just sitting there at your fingertips.
Yeah.
There's no reason do them.
Why wouldn't you? I agree. Completely agree. Oh, Daniel, that's been such a good kind of summary. I mean, it's been a long one, but and we've still just touched the surface, really. So I think that cheat sheet is going to be really valuable for all the listeners. So we'll definitely put that in the show notes. And I just wanted to mention, you've also got this amazing lifetime discount code offer. So anyone that goes to Daniel's site and spends $150, for example, will get a 10% discount code, not just for your next purchase, but for every other purchase thereafter. I'm right in that. Yeah, unbelievable. And spend $250, you get 15% off for life after that. Spend $350, you get 20% off for life. And the amount of music you're coming out with, like, that's going to be a pretty good deal for all the future stuff.
My whole outlook is geared towards getting a long-term relationship with teachers, getting a long-term relationship with students, so they can say, look, like my music, enjoy it, keep on using it, and spread it all around the place, because that's what I like.
Yeah, that's it. And you're also featured on the Piano Maestro app, which was something new towards the end of last year, so I'll put a link to that app for people there too.
One little app.
Yeah, amazing. I've written about it before. If you haven't started using that in your studio, you've got to get into it.
But it's to find my piece in that one, if you go to, I think it's, you need to scroll to Library, Methods, and then scroll down, and then Supersonics.
Yep.
So they're not included within the actual journey. You need to go find in the Methods section.
Yep, fantastic. And did you have any other offer or anything just before we wrap up? At the moment on your site?
Yeah, all this. If you keep in touch via social media or by on my email list, these days I'm not into big, huge sales, because I think the deal you're getting is quite good to start with.
I think you've got a pretty good deal out generally.
So in terms of things that you're looking to get this month, any purchase you make, so this is March, any purchase you make this month goes into the draw to win one of four $50 vouchers to my site. So in the future, other things, or most will be bonus offers, so you get this extra little piece if you make a purchase and things like that. So just little value-adding things to you, and also coming out with more videos teaching performance notes for my pieces. So if you like a piece and you want me to do a video on it, you can just go on Facebook or shoot me an email or something, because I'll go and do videos sort of explaining how I did each piece. That's and great. How I teach it and some little tips about it.
Fantastic. So where do people find you, Daniel?
I'm at supersonicspiano.com.
Great.
So okay. If you can just go straight there, or just type Supersonics Piano into your search engine and you can find me there.
Beautiful. That's great. Well, thank you so much, Daniel. We'll wrap it up. It's been awesome speaking with you, as it always is. I always look forward to catching up with you, even live or on Skype. It's been great. So all those show notes, if you're interested in finding out more and getting that cheat sheet, go to timtopham.com/episode1, and that's episode with the number 1 next to it. And it's timtopham.com. So that's where all the info is. And finally, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd love for you to leave a review on iTunes. This is the best way to get the news out about a new podcast like this. Some favorable reviews would be great, but I want you to be honest, obviously. And the way to do that is, if you're unfamiliar with it, head to iTunes and the podcast. When you're up on your screen, you'll see a review link. What I might do is just record a quick screen capture or some pictures under the podcast menu on my website. If you go to the podcast menu, you'll see a leave a review instruction, so make it nice and easy. So I think that's it. Any other things, Daniel, to finally say before you wrap up?
No, that's it. Just the final thing about composing is that the only way basically to do it is to jump in and do it. Do it regularly. Yep. Little small bits every day is better than trying to say, okay, well, sit down and compose your Magnus, your first symphony. It's learn by doing. That's how I did it. I jumped in, and then you find a new idea and you incorporate that, and then over time your ideas get more sophisticated and you become more adept at what you do. So a little student coming in, you just say, well, come back with a little idea. Try this, and then you can use it. Keep on little stepping stones all the way up, and eventually you can end up with something that's really quite spectacular.
Yeah, and it can build up over a series of a 10-week program. You could do a little bit each week with a student and build it up. And I think the other thing I'd say is, don't be afraid to make mistakes. You're gonna have some lessons that don't maybe work so well. You're gonna have some flops. You're gonna have some chords that are real awful. But on the whole, students will love the fact that you're trying something new with them. It's great. All right, mate. I'll speak to you later, and thanks again so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, bye. See everyone.